Blog Talk Radio.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
He's probably taking the last count at the moment. I'll do my best to wait.
Last night.
For African people, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization. And they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us, so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors, because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve, and at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diasporas, both objects of a global miasma that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that describes them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation, those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation, Ashe. pour libation to our children and those yet to be born. For they are the ones that you must teach. And you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity, for they will call your name in all eternity. To our children we pour libation. Ashe. Ashe. Asheo.
You are listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kraft. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank. And they are operating on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to the search portal. Put in the Sankofa Historical Society and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening at 6 o'clock. Warriors Way Radio. Continuing the fight.
Hotel family, this is your brother, Kwasi Shujaa Kwatu Craft, your warrior for the people. Blessed to be here back today with everything that's going on. We talk about, the COVID and just all type of situations going on. You're hearing about violence and crazy just scenarios. You know, I was just reading something where a mother left, I think it was at a Walmart or something to that effect, where a baby, a one-year-old baby got a hold of a gun and, you know, and there was an injury in result to that. So people, we got to do a better job of if we're going to have weapons, and I believe that was in Texas, but we got to do a better job in securing our weapons, you know, if we have kids, things of that nature. And we lose so many young lives, you know, senselessly to violence, and just so much of it can be prevented, you know, especially if we have firearms and, you know, we need to be able to place them somewhere where they're secure and no one can get to them other than maybe with a key or it has a lock on it, you know, where something like that doesn't happen. I know you want to have readily if you need it, you know, but, you know, we really do have to, if you got, you know, young people in your vehicle, you have a gun in your vehicle, and that gun is not secure, and, you know, things can happen, and, you know, we keep reading about things like that. So I'm going to, tonight, the program, we're going to be talking about boosting your immunity. And I have a guest, Leonard Wayne Wilson, and he does BI Fitness, and he's a nutritionist and fitness guru. And so he does a lot of work with in the Milwaukee area. He's done works in another place, but right now I think he's setting up to do a lot of things virtual because of the pandemic. And then with this new variant that they're talking about, where it's, you know, it's pretty contagious. And so a lot of places have shut down. But, you know, when we talk about our immune system, and we're going to talk kind of the focus is going to be on how we can build up our immune system. And the things that we shouldn't eat, the things that we do. I mean, it is not just what you eat, it's how you, I mean, just your emotional state can raise and lower your immune system. And so there's a lot of things that we need to talk about, and we'll go into some information to support, you know, those thoughts. And but before we go any further, I'm going to do an ancestral profile. And the ancestral profile today is going to be on George Washington Carver. Now, George Washington Carver, born 1864, some places, literature, and there's a question mark behind that birthday, it could be 1863. And he succumbed became ancestral on January 5th of 1943. Now, he was an American agricultural scientist and inventor who promoted the alternative to crops, to cotton, and methods to prevent soil depletion. He was the most prominent black scientist of the early 20th century. Now, while a professor at Tuskegee Institute, Carver developed techniques to improve soils that were depleted by repeating plantings of cotton. He wanted to poor farmers to grow other crops, such as peanuts, sweet potatoes, as a source of their own food and to improve their quality of life. Now, the most popular of the 44 practical bulletins the farmers contained in 105 food recipes using peanuts, although he spent years developing and promoting numerous products made from peanuts, none became commercially successful. Now, apart from his work to improve the lives of farmers, now Carver was a leader in promoting environmentalism. Now, so he received numerous honors for his work, including the Spingham Medal of the NAACP. Now, in the era of high racial polarization, his fame reached beyond the black community. He was widely recognized and praised in the white community for his many achievements and talents. In 1941, Time magazine dubbed Carver as the Black Leonardo. Now, there was a color film of Carver shot in 1937 at the Tuskegee Institute by African-American surgeon Alan Alexander, was added to the National Film Registry of the Library of Congress in 2019. Now, the 12 minutes of footage includes Carver in his apartment, office, and laboratory, as well as images of him tending flowers, Carver in his apartment, and displayed his paintings, because he was also a painter, and he painted the growing of plants and just the land. He was in love with, you know, the plant. Now, the film was digitized by the National Archives as part of the multi-year effort to preserve and make available his historical significance and film collection of the National Park Service. Now, Carver was born into slavery in Diamond Grove, Missouri, now near Crystal Palace, and that was sometime in the early 1860s. Now, the date of his birth, again, it was uncertain, but was not known to Carver, but it was before slavery. Now, before slavery was abolished in Missouri, which occurred in January 1865 during the American Civil War, his master, Moses Carver, was a German-American immigrant who had purchased George's parents. Now, Minnie, Mary and Giles from William P. McGinnis on October 9, 1855 for $700. Now, when George was a week old, he and his sister and his mother were kidnapped by night raiders from Arkansas. Now, George's brother, James, was rushed to safety from the kidnappers. The kidnappers sold the trio into Kentucky. Now, Moses Carver hired John Bentley to find them and found them, and George was only an infant at that time, and Moses negotiated with the raiders to gain the boys' return and rewarded Bentley. Now, after slavery was abolished, Moses Carver and his wife Susan raised George and his older brother James as their own children, and they encouraged George to continue his intellectual pursuits, and his aunt Susan taught him basics of the reading and writing. Now, black people were not allowed at the public schools in Diamond Grove. Now, George decided to go to school for black children 10 miles south in Neshosa. Now, when he reached town, he found the school closed for the night. Now, he slept near a barn. By all accounts, the next morning, he met a kind woman, Maria Watkins, from whom he wished to rent a room. And when he identified himself as Carver, George, as he had done his whole life, she replied, now that his name was George Carver, George liked Maria Watkins and her words, and she learned, and she said to him, you must learn all you can, then go back out into the world and give your learning back to the people and make a good impression on them. Now, at the age of 13, because he wanted to attend the academy where he moved to from home and from his foster family in Fort Scott, Kansas, after witnessing the killing of a black man, Carver left the city. He attended a series of schools before earning a diploma in Minneapolis High School in Minneapolis, Kansas. Now, during his time spent in Minneapolis, there was another George Carver in town, which caused confusion over receiving mail. So Carver chose a middle initial at random and began requesting letters be sent to him addressed George W. Carver. Someone once asked him what the W stood for, and he said Washington. And Carver grinned and said, why not? And but he never used Washington as his middle name. He signed his name as George W. Carver or simply George Carver. Now, Carver had applied in several colleges before being accepted at Highland University in Kansas. And when he arrived, however, they refused to let him attend because of his race. Now, in August of 1886, Carver traveled by wagon with J.F. Beeler from Highland to Eden Township, and he maintained a small conservatory of plants and flowers, and he was a genealogical collection. And he manually plowed 17 acres, 69,000 feet of the, and claimed the rice, the planting of the rice, corn, Indian corn, and garden produce as well, fruits and trees and shrubbery. He also earned money by odd jobs in town and worked as a ranch hand. In early 1888, Carver obtained a $300 loan at the bank of the Nass City of Education, and by the end, Carver started studying at the art and piano. His art teacher, Etta Bird, recognized Carver's talent for painting flowers and plants, and she encouraged him to study botany at State Agricultural College. Now it's known as Iowa State University. Now, when he began there in 1891, he was the first black student at Iowa State. Carver's bachelor's thesis for a degree in agriculture was the plant as modified by man, dated 1894. Iowa State University professor Joseph Budd and Lewis Pamel convinced Carver to continue there for his master's degree. Now, Carver did research at the Iowa Experiment Station under Pamel during that next 2 years. Now, his work at the experiment station in plant pathology and mycology first gained him national recognition and respect from, and Carver received his master's in science degree in 1896. Now, Carver taught as the first black faculty member in Iowa State. Now, despite occasionally being addressed as Dr., Carver never received an official doctorate. As a personal communication with Pamel, he noted that it was a misnomer given to him by others due to his abilities and their assumptions about his education. Now, what was said, both Simpson College and Selma University awarded him the honorary doctorate of science in his lifetime. Iowa State later awarded him a doctoral of human letters in 1994. Now, in 1896, Booker T. Washington, the first principal and the president of Tuskegee Institute, invited Carver to head his agricultural department. Now, Carver taught there for 47 years, developing the department's into a strong research center, working with two additional college presidents during his tenure. Now, he taught methods of crop introduction of seven alternative cash crops to farmers that would also improve the soil areas and heavily cultivated into cotton. Now, initiated research into crop production and taught generations of black students farms and technology for self-sufficiency. So we're talking George Washington Carver. He did so many great things, and he was a man that just lived a good life. But and when we say good life, I'm saying he was able to do the things that he wanted to do in regards to his studies. You know, but as a black man with all the conflict, you know, that he dealt with, you know, as an infant, you know, being kidnapped and then having to be bought back and then being, you know, schools not really wanting to accept him. And, you know, he just went through a number of trials and tribulations like most black people at that time because, you know, even though slavery was abolished in 1865, they had all these different slave codes to just prevent people, the society, from learning and advancing. And so for him to make all the advancements and then be recognized by even a lot of white people for the work that he did, for his contributions, you know, because he was a man that wanted to help. He was fascinated with the growth of plants and you know, in the study of it and also the soil, because he wanted for the poor man to gain a source of living, not just from picking the cotton and growing cotton and stuff. He wanted them to be able to sustain their lives and stuff, so he wanted them to plant other things. That's why he was sweet potatoes was other things that people had planted that he recommended. And so there were just so many different things that that were done, you know, for the benefit of others, because he was a man that looked out for them, and that's what he was, one of the things that he was known for. So that is going to be our ancestral profile, George W. Carver. And we're going to now kind of talk a little bit about the conversation tonight. Like I said, I was looking up a number of different things, and a lot of people think that, you know, if you eat the right foods, if you size, all those different things, it's going to make you healthier. And depending on your circumstances, you know, that can very well be true. But you have to understand that when, and I'm not a doctor, and I'm not saying that I am or anything like that, but then there are some common sense things. And the common sense things is that, one, we're dealing with a crisis when they talk about a pandemic, meaning that, you know, there is a virus that is worldwide and it is contagious, and that more than likely everybody is going to be affected by this virus. And whether they live or die is going to be based on, you know, their immunity and their health status. If you're not eating well, if you have a poor diet, you don't exercise, because one of the things that they talk about with the COVID is that they say that if you have underlying health problems, let's say you're 100 pounds overweight, let's say you got high blood pressure, you have a number of different ailments, you went through chemo, radiation, different, and you have, and your body has been weakened through a lot of that treatment that you received. And when you catch, whether it be a cold or something else, It is generally worse on a person if their body is in a weakened state. And so they're telling people that if you have underlying conditions, you know, you need to get this vaccination because, you know, it really attacks those areas where, you know, people may be having a weakness in the area and stuff like that. And so, and I can't go into specifics like why it does those type of things, but because I'm not a doctor. But that's one. That's how they put the information out there for the novice person to kind of understand. So they're telling you if you have these health issues. Now, myself, I did contract COVID. I was at a church service, and everybody was wearing a mask, and there was a guy that I would think he was, I think he was 80-something, and he came to church, and he said, I wasn't feeling well, but the Lord told me to come to church, and so I got up and I came to church anyway. And that person was sick, and he sat in front of me, and like I said, he had a mask on, and I had a mask on. Everybody in the church had a mask on. And after I left church, I found out that this guy had COVID and that he infected some other people. And I remember I put my hand on his chair. And I, because I that's the only contact I basically had with him. And it was that close. And like I said, we're wearing a mask. And I ended up getting COVID the next day. And, you know, a lot of times they tell you, well, you're not going to know for a couple of days or several days or maybe a week if you're going to get it. But, you know, there were a couple guys in the church that had some compromised health. Their immune system wasn't good and that they had some a number of different ailments where they were receiving medication and had a number of different surgeries and stuff. And they got really sick right away. So, again, they called me to let me know. I went and got tested, found out I had COVID. And I was out of service for several days, you know, because I didn't want to make contact with anybody. You know, they told me that I had this COVID flu. And that kind of takes a little longer to get out of the body and stuff like that. But I was basically okay. My wife basically nursed me back to health. I wasn't laid out or anything, but I just basically stayed away from people so that I wouldn't make anybody contagious. So that's what I did. But just thinking about that, you know, how I contracted it and the paranoia that, you know, like I'm driving down the street. And if I'm driving down the street and I look around, I'll see people in a car by themselves with a mask on. And then I'm wondering, you know, is that really, you know, but that paranoia, that fear, anxiety and everything, I mean, that lowers your immune system. You know, so I'm going to kind of go into, and that's what you would call stress. Stress weakens your immune system. And so, and I'm going to just read from the American Psychological Association, and it's information that they put out in regards to different studies that they've done. And so what the research shows that stressed out, lonely, or depressed, don't be surprised if you come down with something, psychologists in the field of psychoimmunology have shown that the state of the mind affects one's state of health. I'm going to say that again. Your state of mind, it has shown that it affects one's state of health. Now, and I'm saying that for a number of reasons, because I had people, when they found out I had COVID, it was like they were scared to talk to me on the phone, like they were going to get it from talking to me on the phone. So, I mean, it really, you know, it really threw me, the response that I got from some people. But let me just read on. Now, in the early 1980s, psychologist Janice K. Glazer, PhD, and immunologist, Ronald Glaser, PhD, at the Ohio State University. Okay, I'm sorry. Now, in this research, in the early 1980s, psychologist Janice K. Glaser, PhD in immunologist, Ronald Glaser, PhD in the Ohio State University College of Medicine, were intrigued by animal studies that linked stress and infection. From 1982 to 1992, these pioneer researchers studied medical students. Now, among other things, they found that the students' immunity went down every year under the simple stress of a three-day exam period. Imagine that. Now, test takers had fewer natural killer cells, which fight tumors and viral infections. Now, they almost stopped producing immunity boosting gamma infection and infection fighting. T cells responded only weakly to test tube stimulation. Now, those findings opened floodgates of researchers by 2004. Now, Suzanne Sugarstrom, PhD of the University of Kentucky, and Gregory Miller, PhD of the University of British Columbia, had nearly 300 studies and on stress and health review. Now, their meta-analysis discerned intriguing patterns. Lab studies that stress people to a few minutes found a burst of one type of first responder activity mixed with other signs of weakening. For stress of any significant duration, for a few days to a few months or years, as it happens in real life, all aspects of immunity went downhill. Now, those long-term chronic stress through too much wear and tear can ravage any immune system. Now, the meta-analysis also received that people who are older or already are sick are more prone to stress-related immune changes. For example, in 2002, study by Leanne McGuire, PhD of Hopkins University of K. Glaser, and Glaser reported that even chronic subclinical mild depression may suppress an older person's immune system. Now, participants in the study were in the early 70s and caring for someone with Alzheimer's disease and those with chronic mild depression had weaker T-cell responses to two microglobulins, which model how the body responds to virus and bacteria. Now, the immune system response went down even 18 months later. And the immunity declined with age. In line with the 2004 meta-analysis, it also appeared that the key immune factor was the duration, not severity or depression. And in the case of older caregivers, their depression and age meant a double whammy for immunity. So, you know, people talk about their immunity, and when you get older, you know, you have to change your habits. You know, they talk about, you know, the foods that you eat, you know, and so that can boost your immunity. You know, they say fruits and vegetables, you know, citrus fruits, red bell peppers, ginger, garlic, yogurt, almonds, turmeric, poultry, shellfish, green tea, you know. So there are a number of different things. And so that can change in your diet, you know, and that is something that you should want to do for yourself, for your own personal health. And so a lot of people do what they do when they, you know, they're getting ready to, say, go to prom or, you know, I work as a personal trainer at different times. I work with people, and they want to get together and work out with me because they need to get lose some weight to get into this wedding dress, or they're going to a dance, or there's something they want to do some change to their body some kind of way, and they don't have a healthy lifestyle, and now they want to start it. And so now a pandemic hit, and now all of a sudden people are running to the stores, and they're buying all these healthy foods that they should have been eating. And, you know, and the sad thing about it is that, you know, and you have people and they're talking about, you know, take everybody is buying, I can't even remember a lot of the medication and stuff that was out there. But I know it started with an E. But so when my guest, and I, like I said, Leonard Wilson of DI Fitness, when he comes on, he'll probably remember some of those things that I just don't seem to be able to remember right now. But a lot of people are going out there just buying everything to try to boost their immune system. And, you know, these are things that this is the way you should be living your life on a daily basis. All of a sudden something hits, you know, you get beat up. Now you want to learn self-defense or carry a gun or something like that. And I'm like, you shouldn't wait for something to happen before you decide to start caring for yourself or providing and protecting yourself. Certain things should be in place. You should have a style, a lifestyle. It should be the way you live your life. And so we have a lot of people that live in the moment. So for the moment, this is fun, and I'm going to be careless and reckless and, you know, eat what I eat. And so we have a lot of the foods that we eat. The United States, you know, I think we're supposed to be like the most powerful and richest country on the planet, one of the richest countries on the planet. But at the same time, we have the most unhealthy people, and most of it is related with obesity. And along with that comes a lot of different cancers and stuff that arise from your weight issues, you know, and people get all kinds of different types of cancers and things of that nature, and diabetes being, you know, a main issue. And so, and when I've talked to a lot of people, when they talk about a lot of the people that die, you know, that got COVID, they had these underlying health issues. I have several relatives that succumbed during the COVID period. Several of them were older, and they had some underlying health issues. They did not; they hadn't been taking care of themselves for quite some time. And sometimes, when you get sick, you know, and as you get older, and like in the study that I was just reading, the older you get, your immune system starts to decline. And so, there are certain things that, you know, I'm sure that you can do to maintain your strength, you know, as your body ages. And as your body ages, you know, it's kind of going on a decline. You know, you can't do what you used to do at 25, at 65. Your body is in a different state. You may still work out and condition and live a healthy life, but your body has went through the changes from just aging, and that's what happens when you age. And so the immunity, you know, that you're trying to sustain a good living by eating healthy, but it really doesn't stop, you know, a sickness if you get, you know, contract a virus or something like that. But what it does do, you know, the stronger you are, the healthier you are, you may recover sooner. And so those are the things that they're talking about. And so right now, and I think a lot of people just kind of misunderstand that. You know, one of the other things that they say that they also state that, no supplements that you take or a diet or your lifestyle change, or any whatever modification that you make, you know, the best thing that you can do to stay away from a virus is physical distancing. Stay away from as many people. You know, you have your regular group of people that you are in contact with, maybe your family, and, you know, they work, you know, here or there, and they're not in contact with a lot of people. And those people generally are people that are usually doing pretty well. But you have these people that engage with a lot of people, and they just don't take a lot of the precautions. And then there's a lot of other things that people don't look at. You know, like they tell you to cover your mouth. You know, wear a mask. You know, what about your eyes? What about your ears? Can you, it's airborne. Can you contract it that way? You know, and so there's a number of different issues and things that we need to look at when we consider, you know, boosting our immunity. You know, I would tell people, you know, exercise is something that is, you know, because, you know, when you you lose, you want to gain muscular strength. You know, you want to support your body, and you support your body by, you know, taking care of it. You know, you eat the right food. You know, just like if you got a car, I'll put it this way. If you got a car and instead of putting gas in the gas tank, you put water in it. Or you put some other fluid, you're going to ruin the engine. The car is not going to run. And so there are specifics that your body needs in order for you to operate and operate at a high level. Or, you know, so when you, and when you look at athletes, like Olympic athletes, pro basketball players, football players, weightlifters, people that, for a living, this is what they do. This is their, they have a different regimen. They're very strict about how they live, how they work out, the time that they put in on a daily basis in regards to taking care of their body. And the taking care of the body is the food that they eat, how the food is being produced. You know, they're not eating fried food. They're not buying processed food. They're not buying a lot of stuff that's manufactured. You know, just like when you think about, you know, I like seedless grapes. I like, I mean, how do you get seedless grapes? How do they reproduce? I mean, who produces seedless grapes? You know, and so they've got no seed in it. How did it get here? You know, and so they're manufacturing these things, and we're eating them, and our body doesn't know what to do with a lot of these artificial ingredients. And then, therefore, when we have aliens in our body, you know, they stay there long enough, they become tumors. And then we have other issues, and it can become some type of cancer. And so the diet that we, you know, make is very important. But the point in regards to your immunity, you know, you will get some people say, well, it's not going to stop you from getting sick. No, it's not going to stop us in how well you may recover. And so a lot of times for that reason, because somebody said, well, you're going to get sick anyway. So that means it's okay just to eat, not eat a healthy meal, not to hydrate your body. You need water. You know, some people drink or forget to drink something on a daily basis. You need to, you know, drink at least a half gallon to a gallon of water a day. Easy. For some people, even a lot more, depending on whatever activities they're involved in. Sports athletes, they drink a lot of water and to replenish their body. They have to do that. You know, they do a lot of strength and conditioning, you know, and you do that because you want to strengthen your joints. and so that you can function. You want that functional strength. So all of that stuff is very important. And so when we're dealing with this pandemic or any situation, you know, one of the things I used to tell people when I used to work a job in law enforcement, and I used to tell people, and I told people this long before I did this, because long before I was like a personal trainer, I was I did bodyguard work and so forth, and I would tell people, you have to be able to, if you can't run to save your life for somebody else, don't come to work. And when I said that, you know, during that time I was in law enforcement, I did, and prior to that I was doing security in different places and bodyguard work, and you would have a team of people. And you look at somebody and, you know, you wonder, okay, is this guy, does he have a skill set? Can he do certain things? And, you know, and when I would see somebody, and maybe they're 150 pounds, you know, and they're 5'10", 6 feet, you know, so they got pretty a lean build and stuff, and that's okay. Then I'm wondering, are they too small? You know, are they strong? Are they, you know, flexible? Are they able? You know, so, you know, we put them through a number of different challenges just to see, because for certain jobs, they want you to be able to do, they have standards. You know, you should be able to pick up or manage your own body weight, you know, functionally be able to run this far and that. And there's a lot of people that can't do a lot of those things. And so their health is compromised. And they're compromised based on poor eating habits. They don't have a routine where they decide they want to exercise on a daily basis. You know, I know people that I've worked out with them, and they tell me, "Look, I've worked out years. I couldn't even imagine not working out in years. You know, I mean, I couldn't imagine missing a couple of days. That's tough for me because I always do something every day. I mean, that's just what I believe. Again, that's part of your health. And so it's mental, psychologically, all of it, you know, they play hand in hand. And so you have to be that person that is, you know, competent about, you know, what you put in your body. And what you put in your body is what you're going to get out. Like I said, if this is a car and you put water in it and you try to start it, you ain't going anywhere. You're going to ruin that engine. You know, gas goes in there. You have to put a specific type of gas in that car in order for it to go. You know, you have to eat certain foods, put certain foods in your body. Now, there was a guy, C.T. Fletcher, and he was a world-class powerlifter, and he was a heavyweight, and he was close to 300 pounds. And back in the day, and I think this was back in the 70s, and you can look this story up, C.T. Fletcher, and he talks about this story. And but he was, like I said, a world-class powerlifter, winning all these deadlifts, squats, all of those. And he was massive, and he loved being massive. And one of the things that he bragged about is that he would just eat. And he would go to places like McDonald's and eat a lot of fast food, and he would eat 20 hamburgers like it was nothing. You know, hamburgers, fries, this, that. And so he was living off of McDonald's for years. I mean, because it was cheap, and he could get as much as he wanted, and, you know, and they're still in at a restaurant, so it must be good food. Long and short of it, he had a massive heart attack. And luckily he lived. He was able to survive. And, you know, and he changed his lifestyle from that point on. You know, he's still a world-class powerlifter. He lost over 100 pounds and trimmed down and changed his eating habits dramatically. And now you can look him up on YouTube, and you'll hear about this story. And he has this no-quit attitude and very hardcore in how he teaches and promotes how you need to take care of yourself and how you need to look at yourself. And so he's very big in that. But again, and he kind of looked at it as, you get sick, you get this, you get that, it's your fault. Now, you can't blame yourself if you go into a bathroom where some infected person was gagging and coughing and had his hands on something, and all of a sudden you go in there and you put your hand on something and that person, you know, you're more than likely going to contract something. That's just how easy it is, you know. Or somebody that's in that really contagious state and they cough in your face, you know, and all of that is just right on you and you're right on top of you or something. I mean, things can happen, you know. You know, you give somebody a handshake and they're infected, and, you know, it can transfer just like that. You know, so, but again, I'm not talking about how, I'm talking about when you get it. And then once you get it, you know, your body may respond better to recovery, to rest, and nutritional things that you may eat that's going to just give you strength. You know, like when I get up in the morning, you know, I make my breakfast. You know, I may make some oatmeal, put some fruit in there, some bananas and some nuts, things like that. And I'll put a little honey in them, maybe some cinnamon. And that's pretty much it. So that's my breakfast. But I'm eating healthy food. And back in the day, I used to eat a lot of very unhealthy food, things like Spam. Now, that's artificial manufactured processed food. But that was real big, and I ate that Spam, potted meat, all of that stuff. I mean, that was just a common thing, and one of the reasons is because it was cheap, and we were addicted to that, you know. That was the food that we ate. The bread, Wonder Bread, was another thing that we ate a lot. And Wonder Bread is bleached. You know, so a lot of those different things we ate, we didn't know better, so we didn't do better, you know, at that time. But started getting sick from bad decisions that they made. And a lot of times it would take a matter of time, you know, before certain things would develop, you know, or metabolize in your body a certain way where you got sick. I just talked to a friend of mine earlier today, and we worked together doing a lot of different things, and he told me that he had prostate cancer, and he found out because his significant other, she kept encouraging him to get checked out. And we're about the same age. We're both in our 60s. He's younger than me. And the doctor basically told him if he would have waited just a little later, you know, he wouldn't have made it. He wouldn't be here. So it was lucky that he came in, and he was very reluctant to get checked out. But he went and got checked out, and now he's on target to get everything taken care of. And prostate cancer is something that can really be taken care of if caught early enough. But a lot of us do not go to the doctor. And he told me he hadn't seen a doctor in 27 years. And so, you know, he's very fortunate that, you know, nothing, it didn't get worse, you know, but he had some really bad eating habits, and so he's got to change his diet moving forward, you know, and they told him with the different changes that he has to go through in his life, you know, he'll have a colostomy bag for a short period of time, and when he heals from all of the, from the treatment and everything like that, he'll be going through some other issues in regards to how he lived his life. He said, you know, his sex life will most definitely change, and he may have some function for a year or two later, but after that, that's pretty much it. But he understands that. And so those are different things that you go through and you find out, you know, and that's a fear for a lot of us, because when you look at, they talk about President Bill Clinton back in 95. He apologized about the Tuskegee experiment and other experiments that the U.S. government had performed on black and brown people of our community, and not telling anybody that this is what they did. And at this time, they revealed that they did over 4,000 experiments for about 30 years. And so you had hospital people that were involved that also performed these tests. Now, they said this was from 1950-something to 1974. So he said 30 years. So I'm listening to this, and you can play that back, and you can research it and look it up on YouTube. And it'll talk about Clinton apologizing and stuff about the experiment. And then I'm thinking about, wow, you're talking about 4,000 experiments that were performed on U.S. citizens. They were also talking about a radiation experiment that they did on in a housing project in St. Louis, where they and pretty much everybody in that complex died and from different types of cancer. And the United States Army were performing a test, and they picked a poor area in St. Louis, apartment complex predominantly black, and they injected some type of I don't know if it was a gas treatment or something like that that they put in the ventilation and stuff, and so people got infected with that. And so we've been using so many different experiments. And so they talked about that. And like I said, you had the former president, Bill Clinton, talk about it and say that he was sorry. And so my problem with that was I understood, you know, his sorrow, but I didn't appreciate, you know, the time frame that he talked about. Because I'm thinking about Vertus Hardeman. Vertus Hardeman, when he was 5 years old and he went to a school in Indiana, elementary school in Indiana. And the United States government went there under the guise that, you know, they sent some nurses into the school, and they were going to try to cure, they had a cure for wigworms. So they used radiation on these students. And this Vertus Hardeman was one of the students, and he developed a brain tumor, deformity, and a hole in his brain, and there's pictures of him. He lived, I think, up till 80-something years old or 80 years old, and he died, I believe, in 2005 or 2007. But this President Clinton apologized for these experiments that the U.S. government has performed on the U.S. citizens and not acknowledging them or letting them know any of that, and he was saying that he was sorry about that. So for 30 years of treatment. Now, he said from the 1950s to 1970s. Now, this incident with Vertus Hardeman, he was born in 1922. When this test was performed, he was 5 years old. So that was 1927. So the truth in regards to how they when they let you know certain things, and that was disturbing to me. You know, like, man, you know, you guys, you get the president saying he's going to hold on a second. Let me, my caller, my guest, thinks he's having some problems calling in. I don't know what's going on. It might be some internet problem tonight because I had received some other information from somebody a while back. So this is my guest speaker, Leonard Wayne Wilson of DI Fitness. And so I just got a message from him trying to call in, but it's saying busy. Okay, here he is. All right.
Hey, how you doing? I'm on here.
Hey, I'm doing. I can hear you now. Okay.
All right.
I was just talking about Virgis Hardeman. I talked about the story where the United States government had performed a radiation test on elementary school kids, indicating that they had a cure for woodworms. And he lived with a deformed head and a hole in his brain, you know, up until he passed at 80 years old. But again, they performed it. The United States government performed this test on, you know, elementary school kids in the 1920s. He was only 5 years old when they performed that test on him and dozens of other students. And so when the former president Bill Clinton apologized in 1995 about for the Tuskegee airmen, their experiment, the experimentation they did on them with injecting them with syphilis to see what the results would be, and purposely telling them that, oh no, we were giving you an antidote, so to speak, and that wasn't the case. And so, you know, the trust. And I was just talking about a friend of mine that hadn't seen a doctor in 20-something years, and he was found out that he has prostate cancer. And he they were able to get to it, so he'll be okay. But, you know, the fact that, you know, he wouldn't even go in to get checked out, you know. And then you look at today right now, you know, people are like a big rush to be healthy because, you know, with this COVID. I mean, can you rush into good health? You know, I mean, what do you think? I mean, is that something, or should this be the way you live your life? You know, you see some people, do you get obese in one night? Some people are born, you know, they're heavy, and some people are born small, and they stay small. There's for a number of different genetic reasons, and then there's some reasons where people just have bad and poor habits, and they get bad information. You know, so what is it that we can do to help change or even boost our immunity? Because one of the things that I don't know if you saw in the text or that I sent, I said your immunity should be your lifestyle. If you could give me some, I talked about some foods, you know, fruits, vegetables, people talk about boosting their immunity and stuff like that, but I'm saying that really doesn't stop you from getting sick. It may stop you from how bad you get sick, but it's not going to stop you from getting sick if you run into a contagious person that has something and you're up under it.
That's true.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, my thoughts is that it's true.
Before we go into that, could you just give some information about yourself and, you know, the things that you do, you know, DI Fitness, and, I mean, what does that all mean and what does that all entail, and how long have you been doing that?
First of all, my name is Leonard Wilson, and DI Fitness, it stands for Divine Intervention Fitness, LLC. I've been doing this business now. May will mark 16 years as a fitness trainer, fitness coach.
Correct.
And it's really about taking care of yourself. Really, it's exercise, nutrition, and the right mindset. Applying those three things, you're going to reach your goal. So part of what I do is really about the, you know, your mind. Your mind is stronger than your body, and when you apply that, you'll reach your goal. That you can do it. That there's nothing that you can't do when you your mind is stronger than your body. So I'm a huge naturopathic person. I don't even take, for headaches, I don't even take pills or any aspirin. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about building your immunity is so important, especially in the climate that we're living in, that I am a strong believer of natural immunity, meaning that we eat the right foods and we exercise, you know, mm-hmm. That's going to help. And also it'll help because it's going to be almost unavoidable to sometimes not catch a cold or something sometimes right. periodic. There's some people do it, some don't, but it's your body's ability to fight that off. I mean, it's important to allow your body to fight those things off. With any kind of infection, any kind of virus, your body has the ability to fight it off on its own. But part of that, what strengthens that, of course, is the foods we eat, exercising. And I know we've had conversations. A bad relationship can stress you. We're talking about stress. Stress
yes.
can, you know, zap out your immunity. A good relationship can keep you going.
Now I have to add on, and you or you need to add on to your relationship in regards to. I would think that Queen Tara Wilson has boosted your immunity.
She has boosted my immunity 100 times 100.
Yeah.
So I feel very blessed and thankful for that.
So you are officially off the market.
Just got married.
Yeah.
Man. So my immunity is at a whole all-time high now.
Exactly.
So I feel good.
And I didn't say that to kid a lot, but I just wanted to, because your immunity, because they talked about it, and I was talking about an article I had read earlier when it was talking about college students and how their immunity is lowered during the anxiety that they have during exams.
That's right.
You know,
that's
right. Because of the stress level. And so, like I said, when you got so many people that are worried about getting sick, and if you're worried about getting sick, you're going to get sick.
That's right.
You're going to get sick.
That's right.
Kind of
it's
worried,
true.
But, yeah. But, yeah.
That
no,
is true.
So you talked about, you know, so we mentioned the stress. I mean, what do you eat? What do you, you know, how do you, you know, live make things, and how do you encourage other people? I mean, you just had a class not too long
yeah.
ago.
Yeah, I'm still here in the gym. We just wrapped up, so because there's usually a conversation after the class, so we just got a little bit behind, but I'm still here. I'm going to stay in here. But yeah, we do. I work with this particular group, and you mentioned earlier about prostate cancer. It's a group I work with. It's called Men Moving Forward. It's an organization, it's a group actually based off of a cancer study to study prostate cancer in African-American men. So part of this study is what we're doing now is we're doing it's a 16, they're done in 16-week increments. This is the sixth cohort group. And what we focus on is just what I said earlier, what I believe in, which is exercise, nutrition, and the right mindset. So we spend 16 weeks getting guys to change the behavior and focus on living in more of a healthier lifestyle, because it's been proven that eating better, eating healthier, and exercising has been proven to help lower those chances of prostate cancer. And one of the reasons why many African-American men are subject to that based on the studies is one of the number one reasons is stress. And so stress, bad diet, and not exercising. But been proven that if you eat better, exercise better, lowers your stress, and you become healthier. So we're seeing these guys in the study right now has been phenomenal. These brothers are age ranges. The youngest we've had was 41 years old, and as old as we had was 81 years old. And within those 16 weeks, a lot of them have turned around, and they're still doing it. It's a 3-year study, we're still in it, but it's just being a part of it. It's been awesome because these brothers are really excited about it. And a lot of them, when they finish their 16 weeks, we keep the door open for these guys to still continue to come and work out with the guys. So we do a workout, and then we go into what we call education or intervention, where we talk about different subjects. And we've had a few doctors that will come to talk a little bit about what transpired. But a lot of my conversation with them is making sure that they're staying on point with emphasizing the nutrition part and saying that. And not only that, but we also include a cook. He's an African American cook, a brother that
right.
cooks. That he provides a plant-based meals. He provides, and not only this chef Jones, Marvin Jones, but also we've invited a former participant who literally got so excited about changing how he ate, he got into his plant-based diet, Dennis McMurray. This brother really transformed, and we've invited him back where they actually pay him to get an opportunity to provide and prepare meals for the guys as a part of a workshop. So these guys, he's actually come and done a presentation for the guys twice.
Right.
Showing him, and then the fact that he was part of this program, it's been amazing.
Mm. So but, I'm wondering, you know, with all of this going on, and, you know, a lot of people, you know, schools are shutting down. They're doing everything virtual, but you are person to person with these people. And you know, and this is a regular thing, and you've been doing this for several weeks, despite, you know, everything that's going on, and yet these people they're healthy. What kind of improvements have they made? Have you had people that were, you know, dealing with obesity, and, you know, they're making some drastic changes since they've been involved with the program, understanding and learning how to live better? I mean, how long have a lot of these people maintained these bad habits or encourage them to, you know, just make the changes that they made. You know, you guys, you know, like you said, you monitor that, but, you know, a lot of these people, they came in with the prostate. They were clients that had those issues, and they're just trying, or these are just people in general that they want to make sure that, hey, put these guys to make sure they don't get this.
Well, yeah, these guys are coming post-prostate. Either they had some type of surgery, some type of radiation treatment, and I think one out of the studies have had their PSA numbers have been up high. But the majority are all
what number?
Their PSA, their PSA.
And that is
10. And that is okay. That is the number that determines how high their prostate is, how big it is. Usually it's a range between minus one to as high as seven,
okay.
Meaning it's the inflammation that's showing in that area of the prostate.
Okay.
So they usually refer to that as a number on how high it is. So if most guys, and as we get older, it does get enlarged a little bit.
Yeah, right.
So when they monitor that, if it gets, you know, high as a seven, it's concerning for them, but sometimes they'll go down.
Mm-hmm.
If you went from one to five within a year or two, then they're concerned on that. But a lot of that
right.
is traced on what you're eating and how you're eating and how you're living. So if you're eating bad, you're not exercising, you're eating more of a meat diet. They're seeing that people that are more on a high meat diet seem to also kind of fit in that. So they want to. Part of what we're trying to do is encourage more of a plant-based, not completely plant. We're not telling people to go vegan or become vegan, but we want to encourage that kind of increase that, because there's a lot of guys that come to the group that, like as you were mentioning and it asked, is that have been most of their life have been on, you know, meat,
right.
No real vegetables, and now this is the cost of that. So now introducing to them. Foods that you can eat that is plant-based and that tastes good is a game changer for a lot of the guys that's been in there. There's guys that have shared who's completed the 16 weeks and before the 16 weeks are out have implemented and incorporated into their diets more of a plant-based diet. Now, some of them, of course, I'm not going to tell you that they all went completely vegan and cut meat completely out, but a lot of them have now become more conscious of how much meat they eat. They've cut back on it and, you know, and they're doing it. So that's really all you want. You want to create a healthy balance and knowing that and understanding that. So we've also had, and I meant to mention it too, Bridget Wilder, the sister. Bridget Wilder came in. She's a nutritionist, and she does an awesome presentation with the guys. So in these 16 weeks, they're actually exposed to, like I said, the chef, the former Men Moving Forward participant who's now plant-based diet, and, of course, a nutritionist. So it's an awesome program and what we're and what's going on there with that.
Wow.
So
that,
a lot of
that is a 16-week program.
16-week program, and a lot of the guys, like I said, when they completed, are welcome to come back for just the workout. So a lot of the guys have gone from our program, and they'll still come back and work out with the guys, and then a lot of them have been, you know, have gym memberships now. A lot of them are still working out. I follow a lot of them who are from Instagram to Facebook who actually take pictures of the foods that they eat. And this brother, he was in a group. It's just great seeing how these guys are really realizing that they're eating to live and focusing on eating to live and not allowing, even during the earlier parts of the pandemic, we were able to still continue. And that was so important to me because we weren't going to allow, you know, that fear to create another lower body. So I said, listen, we were able to do it on Zoom. So all the guys who had technical issues doing it, we were able to the gentleman I work with, Ambrose Wilson Brown. He's also another trainer and focuses on mindfulness is what he does, mental performance. He's a person I work with as well. We do this together, and we went online and did Zoom with these guys and got them in there. So it didn't matter how old you were; they had access to a computer and how to do it. We were able to get them on there during the pandemic and still completed the workouts right there from their home. And so we didn't allow that to stop us from staying healthy.
Wow. Well, you know, I got to get back in there because I got to let them see me beat you up and stuff like that. So do some other things, you know. I thank you for letting me come down there. I'm just wondering because you said you wanted, you know, they want to do a study and you want to show, you know, the black men, you know, of all ages in regards to how they can take better care of their bodies. And so how are people seeing this or getting this information out there? I mean, do you have 50, 100 people in the class? I mean, what is the numbers like?
Well, our numbers range between 8 to 12 guys, depending on what they've been doing is they've been trying to advertise here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Because it's a Milwaukee, Wisconsin study, so they're trying to just kind of circulate there. So we've been from radio ads to social media as well as churches to kind of advertise to get more participants who might be interested in. Because here's the thing, though, and as we were talking about here, it's a study. And I'll be honest with you, I was reluctant at first to when they asked me to participate because I said, you know, we, as you were talking about, and as this show, as you alluded to, we're talking about a history of, you know, what kind of study they're going to do on us.
Mm-hmm.
So my biggest concern was what was this study? So when I had a chance to meet with Dr. Melinda Stully, what is it exactly is it that you're trying to do and why? Because if it does not incorporate eating right, as I always say, exercise, nutrition, and the right mindset. If it's not part of that, I don't want any part of it. It has anything to do with pharmaceutical products. If it has anything to do with testing, putting stuff in our system that we shouldn't have.
Right.
If it's doing anything against the things that I believe in, I don't want to be a part of it. So I was very honest and candid, as well as how much input do I have in it and how much can I do in it, what can I say in it, and without that, because, you know, cancer is $1 billion or more industry. You know, they make money off of people getting sick. So I want to know, how is this going to be beneficial for these guys? If it's not about trying to help them and really helping them in a natural way, I don't want nothing to do with it. They get somebody else because not all money is good money. So when she shared with me that, no, we're looking at a plant-based diet. We're looking at exercise. The studies are showing it. And yes, we want you to help us with the – I knew right then and there I wanted to be a part of it.
Well, yeah, I tell you, I can't say a newfound respect for you because I know you and I know that you're very determined and that you have values. And the fact that you're like, look, I'm not doing a study and you want to inject our people with this, that, and try these different things, and I'm not that person. You know, and so I appreciate that, you know, you are very forceful in regards to your stance and how you feel and what you will stand for and not stand for. And so we need more people like you doing these type of things. And so I'm saying you're just that one person. How can we branch you out? How do we get you to go? Why can't you be at a dozen different schools? Are there other people that can do the work that you're doing that they can train and to support this research?
Well, that's what we're trying to do.
Or was yours just that one test?
Well, for me, it was right now it's just been this study. So they want, the ultimate goal is when they complete the study is to be able to open this up, to actually make a program out of it through Milwaukee Recreation. And offer it, and they've just been trying to figure out how, at the end of this, how can the rec department make this work without trying to charge a phenomenal fee, you know? So to them. So I've been trying to think of ways that this could work because of the fact that if these guys are to utilize the insurance, if this is something that insurance companies would be willing to pay for guys who are, you know, doing this, or even make this a preventative program for people to participate and somehow be able to do it, but. So far, right now, it's just because it's still in the research, is being these guys, the participants, all free and voluntary if they want to do it. And they give them maybe a ticket save gift card or something for their time or for the, because part of the study is not only are they redoing this part, but they do, Marquette is also a participant in Milwaukee. I'm sorry, Marquette University's part of this program and this study.
Okay.
Wisconsin Medical College is part of this study. And, of course, part of the contract that I've got through is through Milwaukee Recreation Department. So with all three of them, Marquette does their part of the studies. What they do is they get an opportunity out of the kinesiology facility. They run the test of their strength test. They do a DEXA scan that determines what their muscle and fat is. They get So then when they do that at the beginning and then they do that at the end to see what their numbers look like. And like I said, we're in the sixth cohort of group, and the numbers of the guys who participate throughout the 16 weeks, the numbers are great. It's been showing that these guys are coming out stronger. They're coming out stronger. Mm-hmm. So and that's been the goal. And I mean, one of the other things, of course, when we talk about other people, you were one. That's why I wanted you to come out there when you came to meet with the guys, because it's important for them to see you and people like you out here in the community, and I'm honored that you have me here, getting this opportunity to talk about this on air.
Yeah, well, I tell you, you've always been making a difference in regards to how you work with people, and the fact that you are just giving back to so many of our seniors, and I know I give you a hard time about that, but. I don't know, I gotta watch myself because I can get started. But you do a fantastic job in informing people and being that role model and showing them. I met some of the our seniors and very strong, able minded people. But like you said, they have to have the right frame of mind. And I think when they see somebody like you and me, when we come in there, and we are very, you can see that we're very passionate and dominant people in regards to what we're talking about and what we want for you. And they know that we want nothing but good for them. And so that there's a trust factor. Because I was actually, I had a nurse that I know very well. She's close to our family. She is trained to do a study and trying to improve the relationships with black women in regards to getting treatment for different type of cancers and having confidence in seeing doctors and so forth. And so she was trying to understand why it's a reluctancy in that regards. And then I started bringing different things up, and it throws me that people in the medical profession, and especially, no other way to say it. I mean, she's a white female, and she didn't know of some of the things that black people have been through. Yeah. And why they're so reluctant in regards to getting tested. Like I was just telling you weren't on, but a friend of mine, he's in his 50s, but he hadn't been to a doctor, and he said like 27 years. And then and his girlfriend was telling him he needed to get checked out and stuff, and he went and got checked out, and then they found out he had prostate cancer, and, you know, and if he would have waited just a little longer, they wouldn't have been able to do anything for him.
Yeah.
The point is, you know, we're so reluctant because of the treatment that we received. You know, when you think of so many people that were mistreated by people that they recognize as being these great doctors and stuff, and the mistreatment of the black women and men in so many instances and stuff. But go ahead.
But I was going to say, there's a great book called it's a book called The Medical Apartheid, written by Harriet Washington. Medical Apartheid, written by Harriet Washington. Washington. And so she talks about the history of medical experiments that were unwitting throughout the history here in America and even abroad of what's taking place. Even she, you know, alludes to the Tuskegee syphilis experiment, which took place from 1932 to 1972, where they were injecting black men with syphilis and allowing it to be untreated. And they kept coming in, getting these injections, trusting that they're getting something that's supposed to be good.
Right.
So this is something that took place for over 40 years. That's just one of many. She mentions many. That's just as you mentioned to the young man who died at 80 years old with that. They did. She mentions many in this book. And so when the question comes, why? Just quite naturally, when we hear and know and see that we're reluctant to want to do that. So a lot of times, even through this conversation of getting guys to come in from this prostate, once we have this conversation.
One quick question. What was her name again? Harriet what?
Harriet Washington.
Okay. I was just wanting to make sure that I had that down because I'm going to see if I can get that book. It's called Medical Apartheid.
Apartheid. Yep, Medical Apartheid.
Wow.
The book is something else. It just talks about the different experiments that was done during slavery. Before that, you know, when coming here, you know, just and then from after that, a lot of things that has transpired from that, you know, has been, you know, so of course most people are going to be a little reluctant to go to the doctor, and then when you do go to hear that now they're saying there's something wrong with you, you know. It's very difficult to want to trust that. So that's why if you take care of yourself, a lot of times, you know, I use doctors as a gauge. Let me just see. I'll get a checkup just to see where I'm at in comparison. If they see they say this is low or this is that, or your blood pressure is high, you need to. I'm not going to take any pharmaceuticals. The first thing I'm going to do is research what lowers my blood pressure. What can I do to keep my blood pressure low? I don't want to take. So I'm going to eat better. I'm going to exercise more. I'm going to take care of myself, and that's the focus. So if I come back, they're going to see that it's there. But yeah, I get it. I get that. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know when we were talking earlier, and I was trying to think of the lady, and that was Henrietta Lacks. And she
that's
was an African American woman with the cancer cells that they took from her body without her consent. Exactly. Till this day, which made her immortal. But again, you know, so many different things that are just done, and they're trying to get you to trust. And like I said, one of the things that you're doing, because there's so many people that, you know, you just pay me the money, I'll do whatever you say. And so I know that there's been many a time that you're out there, times they both don't, and I'm not trying to say that to, it's just that your heart is to help people. That's what you've always been doing. That's the work that you do. it's more important that you reach people and you provide a service for you, and the people that may hire you to do this, or people where you volunteer, because you probably have done, I know that you've done more volunteer work than you've gotten paid for, but you're still doing the good work going out there to help people. And a lot of times people don't really appreciate a lot of the work that you and myself do, where we go out there and we provide a service for somebody because we see that they're in need. And so we want to help them out. And so I thank you guys for coming out there. We're now at Sherman Park, you know. But again, we were trying to uplift our community, you know, with the violence and give them some other resources and things that they can do. And again, you know, not having a healthy or sound mind, there's a number of different things that play in the factor. And, you know, and you being that role model, you know, I mean, it's very obvious that you take care of yourself, you know, by the way you look. I mean, you're a very powerful looking young man and stuff. And so, I mean, what are you, 6'1", 6'2"?
I'm 55. I'll be 56 in June.
A little baby, a little baby. And you're 6'3"?
Yep, 6'3" and a half.
6'3" and 190 pounds. Nah, you ain't seen 190 pounds in 20 years. but what I'm saying is, you know, you're a bigger guy, but you're well fit. You know, you look like you're NFL linebacker, and you know, and you're very chiseled and everything. And it takes work to do that. And so, for all the work that you do with other people, do you find a balance where you can also maintain a good, you know, support for yourself, you know, in regards to what you eat, you are what you eat. I mean, you want to be that shining example, and that, you know, so it's very obvious that you take care of yourself so that when you walk in the room, or most of the time, or friends of yours that walk in the room, everybody knows that we all kind of look the same because we all have that same mindset of what we need to do in order to promote wellness among our people, you know, so... that's a magnificent job that you're doing and stuff like that. And I just would like to see you in some other places and spaces, you know, doing what you're doing here and stuff. But like you said, this is a study. And this is, you said a three-year study?
It's a three-year study. And what they did was because of the pandemic, they put it off, it added another year. So we got another year okay. on that. So even though we worked out through, they still kind of wanted to do some more with that. So that's perfect.
So what are they thinking? I mean, you know, like in regards to, you know, some other things that you can do, because like I said, we're talking about, you know, your immunity and stuff, and you guys are doing some good things, because anytime you're making people feel better about their life choices and decisions that they're making, you know, that's a positive thing, and that's anything good for you is boosting your immunity. You know, you're thinking good, you're feeling good. I mean, good thoughts, good attitude, all of that, all of the positive stuff is good for your body. You know, and you know, so I'm just wondering, you know, where you go from here. You know, when this program is done, I mean, you're. What else are you doing? You do some things with some other organizations, or are you working with women as well as men?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I work with men and women. I also do online training. I'm an online fitness coach. I provide that under my DI Fitness. I do group classes as well, working with men and women. Still work with I was at the schools for a while. Still working on. I would love to get the opportunity to get back with that. But with so much going on with that, it's been pretty tough. I also was doing some stuff recently with North Division girls basketball, doing a little work with them. So I look forward to doing more with seniors, more with everyone that of our people that look like us to take care of ourselves,
right,
so we can continue, to continue to live and send that, you know, that message on to others that we have to, you know. I was really blessed that my grandmother was still here all the way up until she was 94. My great-grandmother was 96, and my grandfather was 92. And, you know, my great-grand, you know, and I just think, you know, that to have that experience, to experience your great-grandparents as well as your grandparents, to have them with you as long as you, you know, as long as God's willing, is always a blessing. And if we can take care of ourselves to that point, man, you know, I think there's so much that we can continue to do for our community and what we can learn from them to keep things going. So
Well, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, like, you're doing all this work, and, you know, like I said, we do what we do in the community. You know, how do you making this grow? I mean, when the study is over, you know, and you work with these girls, but in this line of work, are you seeing a lot of people that look like me and you that are out there in this community doing this kind of work? And if not, you know, I mean, are you mentoring, or are you trying to mentor some other people that, hey, you know, this is what I do. It would be really nice if I got some help. And, you know, this is something, area of study that you should maybe look into, and I can help you. I mean, are you running into situations where you could maybe mentor some young men and encourage and the people there? Because, you know, a lot of these people that came to you, they don't look like us.
Right.
But
exactly.
They
want to
do this study. But they have, you know, the money and the resources, but they also understand from their history, from how they've treated us, that we have lack of trust for them.
Exactly. And so,
they need us. And so I'm just wondering, you know, how, I mean, are you trying to figure out a way to work with a situation to encourage some other people to get them in these situations to do this work? And maybe they might make you that person, well, that can set up, say, look, I want to go to a school. I want to encourage these people to become these trainers so they can do this, so we can do these programs all over. And then you can go around and do checks and balances on these people to make sure that they're doing things the right way. But that way you're reaching more people. So you got a dozen people on this side of town and this area and this and that. So you got this going on, you know, in just so many different places and spaces.
Yes, matter of fact, that is an awesome point. We, Ambrose, the gentleman I was talking about, we were been talking about doing what's called Train the Trainers, along with Manon Sabir.
Yeah.
Manon, we've been talking about this for a while because throughout the course of, you know, the way I was brought up in my family, that my uncles, of course, I was brought up, my mother and father divorced when I was about 10, but still stayed, you know, spent the summers with my father, but my relationship with my uncles, my mother's brothers, were powerful, impactful. My Uncle Kwame, talked to my Uncle George, they were very influential in my life. And they taught me that our life is not just about us, that we reach out and to each of us. So as I got older, young guys that were looking at things, and as I experienced things, I was able to pass things down, and then we can to help create a better village, a better community. We do that. So for me, I came up with that. So all the time, as I've been doing the training, young brothers that have an interest, that see me in the gym, they want an interest and want to know more about training, I tell them, I talk to them about it. Some I've even given the opportunity to do a few classes just so they can get a taste of, see if this is what they want to do. And then the other part is what we're doing now is focusing us, train the trainer, what we want to be able to do, just as you just said, you know, I have conversations with guys who want to get in it, and getting into training initially, you know, is very, you know, it's a lot of people look at trainers as if it's a hobby. They don't understand that you can actually make a living out of this. And a lot of times you got to figure out how do I make this to take care of my family? How am I able to provide? So one of the things is we talk about how to get contracts, how to charge, how to do that. And it's a, you know, how to link in.
Okay.
So part of that is what we're working on doing and doing more. And from, as you mentioned, when they interviewed me, the Dr. Stelly, who's part of the program, is a European woman, and that, but has a heart for the people, and we see that, but
right,
because
right,
they
want
to
right.
do it. But part of their dilemma was they didn't know, because she really wasn't from the community, you know, who else is doing this? You know, who else, what other, are there other black trainers? Because initially they weren't going to go with a white trainer to do a program to work with people that look like us.
So
the beauty of this is that when they gave, after that conversation with her, the beauty of this was that they gave me the opportunity to have this input, because initially they were going to hire a white chef to come in or a white nutritionist to come in and contract. And I said, no, everyone has to look like us. The chef needs to look like us, who's talking about a plant-based diet and changing it. And it had to. I was excited when the brother Dennis McCurry decided when he was, the impact from the program was so strong for him that he was willing to come back and share and do what he's doing. And then the sister that's doing the nutrition, Bridget Wilder, did a phenomenal. Her story was amazing. Her personal story that she shared with the gentleman about nutrition in reaction to her husband who had passed of a heart disease too early, with 9 Her story was so impactful in how she changed her life and her weight, and that the guys were moved by that, and they coming from a sister's, you know, that perspective that
everybody in this program
went through this study. So it's so knowing that there's nothing that they're going to inject them with, there's nothing that they got to take other than the all-natural course of getting – I have nothing but support for that, but it takes that to find out, because, you know, they got all kinds of studies, and we have to know and be a part of that. And part of this, it also paid for me to receive an cancer specialist in exercise. And so they gave me a certificate in that, in which being a part of that and being able to promote a healthy lifestyle is the deal, versus any kind of pharmaceuticals or any kind of things that they're trying to put in your body. But allowing a whole natural approach to it has been awesome. And to have that part, it's been great. So we want to, I've been telling a lot of young brothers about it. Mm-hmm.
You know what? You got me thinking I want to become one of those trainers as well. And I'm curious. And so I'm going to
talk to you. Which is the reason why I had you come. That's why I wanted you to meet him.
Yeah. We'll definitely go into this a little more, because I like that you're so strong-minded and saying, hey, look, the nutritionist got to look like us. The chef needs to look like us. Everybody that comes in here, because so many times they will initiate a program, get us to do all this footwork and legwork and introductions and build the trust, and then replace us with these other faces don't look like us, and then all of a sudden they wonder why everything changes. Because we don't believe in – and then there's also a fear factor when you do things a certain way and stuff like that. And it's just – it's a common – recipe that they've been using on us for so long, and just to see that, you know, the strength in your conversation and how you address them and what you tell them that we need, it most definitely has to be this way. There's no other option. I just love it.
The only challenge, the only downfall was the fact that here in Milwaukee, there's not a black doctor who does the prostate. Can't pronounce it. Urologist, to have a black one. But the one that has come, Dr. Jacobson is a huge plant-based supporter. Wanting the guys to kind of change their diet, because if they're not talking about that when they come, believe me, I bring out the question. When no one's asking, I put that into the question. I need them to instead of making surgery and all those other things as an option. Let me hear you talk about, because I know that most doctors do not cover nutrition in medical school. If they do, it's only like 3%. So I want to hear a doctor just talking about some nutrition in that. And so hearing him, Dr. Jacobson, I will give him that, the fact that he is talking to his patients about that and even talking about that, and he's been referring guys to the study. That's key, but I would love it for someone to look like us that's in that field, but there's not one here in Milwaukee.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, we'll definitely need to work and pray that someone is tuning in and or just being inspired to do this from their walks and their journey in life to, you know, do this work, you know, because our people need to be healed in so many different ways. And it is hard to have a focus if your body is hurting some kind of way. You don't really get what's going on, but yet you keep eating the same thing. You're not taking care of yourself. You're not exercising. You know, like I talk to people all the time, and you and I both hear the same story. You know, I get enough exercise. I walk. I work all the day. I'm always lifting. I'm doing this. I said, that's not exercise. That's work.
That's right.
I said, you're still 30 pounds overweight. Your blood pressure is still like this. I mean, there's other things that you need to do, and this is what exercise. They don't understand the difference. So I think, you know, when you explain different things to them, they can hear it from this other person's mouth, but hearing it from your mouth. But, you know, one of the things, before they even hear it from their mouth, from your mouth, they see it in your image. You know, I mean, when they see you, they see, you know, this Hercules. You know, they're like, man, this guy, you know, he looks like something. Well, I really made you look small when I walked in.
I was waiting. I said, what? We went this whole time? I can't believe this.
I mean, you know, that is just, like I just said, that is just so awesome, the work that you're doing. You know, but how do we, you know, like, how do we get people not to be so fearful? I mean, you got these guys, they're committed to coming out there because they know, because they trust you. They trust that you're doing good work. I know the conversation that you're having with me, you had with them. Because there's
right.
no secret. When you're doing what you need to do, and like when I talk to my people and I talk to them like this way, you know, like everybody don't want to hear what you got to say. Because
that's right.
You're, like I said, it's a mindset.
Yes.
But once they take in, you know, what you're giving them, and the other thing that you said, you're bringing in these educated people that look like us to give them the medical sciences in regards to why they need to do these things. And so
yes.
we're all supporting each other with all this knowledge and all this power. So, I mean, this is just a, you know, just an awesome situation and scenario and stuff like that. I'm just glad that you're doing this work. And like I said, I'm not kidding when I said I want to look into this and see how I can maybe get involved some kind of way so that I can do something. And because we both live on, you're on the north side of town and I'm on the south side of town, you know.
Yes.
And so you do a lot of work on the north side, and maybe I might be, I mean, because there are a number of black people out here on the south side, and they've been through some issues. I have a friend of mine, they sent their mother to the senior center, and their daughter was working as a volunteer, and they was treating her mother all decent and stuff like that. But then once the young girl ended up getting the job and was no longer the volunteer at the senior center, they disregarded treating this girl's mother decent and stuff, and she saw that when she went to pick her mother up, and you know, so she took her out of that senior center. But there is a difference the way people treat us. People try to act like this is just talk, but it is a difference. And this is one of the reasons why they approach you that way, because they know that there's a difference because of the lack of trust in how we've been treated. And that goes back, you know, from slavery to the beginning of time and everything else. You know, I mean, you know, because of the skin we're in, you know, we're treated differently, you know. And
that's right.
So we have to build ourselves up in so many different ways, and we do that by being among other powerful people like yourself, you know, to spread the knowledge and stuff. Any closing thoughts?
I just want to say that I want to thank you for allowing me to be on here. It's an honor, and you, I think, are like a big brother. I'm the oldest in my family, and I've never had a big brother, and you are my big brother, and I thank you and appreciate you and all the things that you do. And so I'm literally honored that you had me on here, and thank you.
Well, man, I'm so appreciated to be your big anything and stuff like that compared to your size and mine. I mean, man, But I mean, we have so much fun, and I think when we do things together, and when people see us and stuff, you know, there's a confidence that we know what we're talking about, and that you know they're in good hands. And so it's always fun when we can do something together. We gotta make that happen again. But you know, thank you for being on, because you certainly have enlightened me in so many different ways. Regards to this conversation and the work that you're doing and the studies that they're putting out there. And I know that the people are happy about it because I've seen their faces and they enjoy being in the class, and I see them working out. And, you know, and it's a good thing, and they know it because they feel better. And, you know, so you're doing some good work. Keep up the, you know, keep it up. your wonderful wife has I know she has encouraged you and support you in so many ways and shapes and forms. So you are a blessed man. And so we thank you for being on Warrior's Way, continuing the fight. We were just talking with our guest host, Leonard Wayne Wilson of VI Fitness. And I forgot, and we should put it up there. You wrote a couple books, right?
Pardon me?
You wrote a couple books. You wrote a couple books, what? So you have at least one out.
Oh, yes, I did. I wrote a book called You Can Do This, Exercise,
right.
Nutrition, and the Right Mindset. I wrote that, and I'm actually finishing up another one that will be coming out soon.
Okay. All right. Well, so I'm going to close with letting everybody know that we will be back next Thursday, Warriors Way, continuing the fight. And thank you for joining us tonight. And we are on Blog Talk Radio. We're affiliated with the Sankofa Historical Society because these programs are archived, so you can check us out there and look this program up. And we will close out with our closing song, and we will see you next week. Thank you.
When the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure.
The heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living in us, resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walked through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots be on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, Lord. Glory. Oh, glory.
Every man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero. Facing the League of Justice, his power was the people. Enemy is lethal, a king became regal. Saw the face of Jim Crow under a bald ego. No one can win the war individually. It takes the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory. The coming of the Lord, my eyes have seen the glory.
One day, when the glory comes,